I always say that when the choir is behind me, that's as close as I will ever get in this life to being in a choir. But at any rate, some of you know that because once in a while they leave my microphone on, which is not pretty. So anyway, thank you. I appreciate your gifts. So today is the weekend where we celebrate the 4th of July. And, you know, we're in the midst of probably family barbecues, fireworks, picnics, and parades. And in the midst of all that, sometimes we forget what this holiday is all about. So the purpose of the holiday, as designed, is for us to celebrate the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And the words from the Declaration say, "These United Colonies are and of right ought to be, are and of right ought to be, free and independent states." Now, of course, we know that this means that July 4th is not only our birthday in the United States, but the birth of all the freedoms that we still enjoy today. And of course, we also know that it took a revolution to bring those freedoms about, did it not? And years later, other founding fathers laid the groundwork for a different kind of revolution in America, a spiritual one, also intended to set the people free. 2 weeks ago, if you were with us, on Father's Day, we discussed three of these fathers of new thought, and they were Ralph Waldo Emerson, Phineas P. Quimby, and Charles S. Fillmore. Who remembers what the S stands for? Hey, yay, Sherlock. Good. Okay. Today we're going to discuss two more founding fathers, and these are more modern founding fathers. I'm calling them today founding fathers of freedom because they brought the new thought message into the 20th and 21st century, respectively. The first of these is Emmett Fox. How many of you have heard of, read Emmett Fox? Look at all the hands in this room. That's interesting. Emmett Fox is one of the most influential New Thought leaders and fathers of the entire 20th century. He attracted wider audiences for a longer period of time than any other New Thought leader, including Charles Fillmore. Born in Ireland in 1886, Fox became a renowned minister, teacher, lecturer, author, mystic, and healer. From childhood, Emmett Fox had a special gift for healing. And in an autobiography, there are several autobiographies of him, but this was written by one of his best friends, Harry Gaze, and it was called Emmett Fox, The Man and His Work. In this work, it says that when Emmett was only 6 years old, just a child, he would place his little hands on his mother's forehead when she had a headache. And not only would her headache go away, but she would be left with this incredible sense of peace and well-being. And other healings followed through the years. He healed neighbors and friends and family and all of that. And the boy's traditionally Catholic family, he was Irish after all, they thought that he had been blessed by some special saint and that his healing power was a result of that. Now, Emmett's father, who was a famous physician and member of the parliament, actually, unfortunately died when his son was only 9. So when Emmett was 9, he lost his father. Eventually, Fox attended Stamford Hill, which was a Jesuit college near London, and it was known for instilling in young men a systematic attention to detail, to being very thorough, and also the power of self-control. And those were two qualities that Fox exhibited for the rest of his life. The Jesuit order also offered him another quality, and that was they trained young men to not be afraid of breaking with traditional teachings. Unfortunately, Fox broke with theirs, or fortunately, but anyway. So when he was 18, he began a serious study of healing, kind of trying to figure out what the source of his own gift was. So he left Stamford Hill to pursue engineering, and he became an electrical engineer. But he continued to study the works of thinkers like Plato and Emerson, along with the metaphysical writings of Quimby, Horatio Dresser, and Charles Fillmore. So there's a connection. All these writers led Fox to a deeper understanding that healing involved harmony of both body, mind, and soul. And in the book, Emmett Fox, His Life Story, The authors say that while Emmett was back in Ireland on a spring break, or on a break from college, from school, he discovered the work of an earlier New Thought teacher named Dimmesdale Stocker. Those guys had interesting names in those days, didn't they? Here we've got, you know, Dimmesdale. Okay, at any rate, Stocker's writing opened Fox to the idea of a life-giving force within. The words that, when Fox read them, the words, "the indwelling Christ is within each man," just helped him realize that the power of every person is within, that everybody has that ability to draw from spirit from within. And it made him realize that he singularly was not healing people, but that a higher force was healing people from within themselves. And that realization actually led to Fox's withdrawal from Catholicism, although he said later, "I never formally left the Catholic religion, I just evolved beyond it," in his words. So as he continued to read and study, Fox became convinced that if divine power was within, it must be a human birthright to commune with God without any intermediary, meaning without any priest, without any minister. And he wrote powerfully, "No one has any authority to put a barrier on the highway to God. No man, no organization, no rules and regulations of either the dead or the living have any power to forbid anyone to that highway of freedom and salvation or to make any terms on how he shall enter it. It is public, it is open, it is free." And by highway, he meant a way to consciousness of the real presence of God. So, powerful, isn't it? Very powerful. Let's see. Okay, so he continued to read and study. And in 1914, he attended a meeting in London. And it was a meeting, the first meeting actually, the organizational meeting of the International New Thought Alliance. And while there, he heard principles that he would spend the rest of his life teaching. They just rang true with what he believed in his heart at that point in time. And I'm summarizing them a little bit. So if you want to see them in their entirety, you can get them online. It's the New Thought Alliance Foundational Meeting Principles. And here they are. We affirm the good as supreme, universal, and eternal. We affirm the freedom of each and every soul as to choice and as to belief. We affirm that God is good, supreme, universal, and eternal. And we affirm as man's divine inheritance, health, and divine supply. This one is long, but it really follows the teachings of Jesus. We affirm the teaching of Christ, of Jesus Christ, that the kingdom of heaven is within us, that we are one with the Father, that we should not judge, that we should love one another, heal the sick, return good for evil, that we should minister to others, and that we should be perfect, even as our Father in heaven is perfect. And we might remember earlier we've looked at the metaphysical meaning of perfect, and it is complete and whole, that we should be whole. And the new thought of God as we affirm the new thought of God as universal love, life, truth, and joy, in whom we live, move, and have our being. These things, not as a profession, but as a practice, we affirm in a service that includes democracy for all. So there is that practical Christianity thread that runs all the way through New Thought, and also the idea of democracy, that we're all equal. We affirm here and now the life everlasting that becomes conscious immortality and the quickened realization of the indwelling God in each soul. And lastly, I think I lost the L on the line, but lastly, that the universe is spiritual and we are spiritual beings. Do those sound familiar to us? A lot of those are absolutely incorporated in Unity teachings. Now, these principles, as I said, resonated with every single thing that Fox believed at that point, but typically, as Unit as Emmett Fox always did, he took his time, he continued to study and read. He was, above all, a scholar. And also remember that Jesuit training about paying attention to detail? He wanted to be absolutely sure that he was thoroughly ready before he began to take the message out. And so just a few years after this meeting, Fox offered his services to the NTA, the New Thought Alliance, in London as a substitute speaker. And the rest, as they say, is history. Almost immediately, he began to draw these huge crowds. Now, actually, Fox was naturally very shy and reserved, but he loved people, and he spoke with such certainty in a simple, direct way that people were drawn to him. As his biographer notes, the sheer vitality of Emmett's conviction that God was love, life, and truth transmitted an energy to all those who came into his orbit. And Fox himself wrote, and I love this, "If your ideas about religion are expressed in a vague and uninvolved style, if you use unusual and ambiguous words, it is a sure sign you do not understand what you're talking about, and you are trying to disguise that fact from yourself." Isn't that a great quote? Very Emmett Fox-like. So soon after that first speech in London, Fox moved to the United States, where he lectured frequently at the Church of Truth in New York. He also taught independently at a congregation at the old Astor Hotel to overflowing crowds. And at about that time, believe it or not, and some of you probably know this story, he applied to Unity for ordination. Anybody hear that story? What happened? They turned him down. Even though he was a highly successful preacher and teacher, according to Lowell Fillmore, the Fillmore's son, Fox was told that Unity would ordain only those who completed its full ministerial training program, and that exists today. I can attest to that. So Fox immediately applied to Divine Science and was immediately ordained there. So. In 1931, he became minister of the Divine Science Church of the Healing Christ in New York. He was immensely popular there also, speaking weekly during the Depression to audiences of 6,000 people at the Hippodrome Theater. This is a newspaper account of one of those meetings in March of 1937. And it says, "The success of the meeting at the Hippodrome exceeded all expectations. Long before 10 a.m., a crowd of people filled the sidewalk for the whole block and down 44th Street, and by the time the service started, over 6,000 people were crammed into the large auditorium. People sat on the steps and around the gangways, and the lobbies were filled, having been provided with loudspeakers. It was undoubtedly," the newspaper account says, "the greatest meeting that has ever been held in the truth movement, and it is true proof of the eager desire that people have for a demonstrable religion which is purely spiritual." Then in 1938, this is the Astor Hotel that he began to speak in. In 1938, the crowds got so big that they moved to the Manhattan Opera House and finally to Carnegie Hall, where the crowds continued to overflow the auditorium and into auxiliary rooms where his voice was carried on public address systems. So for 20 years, Emmett Fox had the largest congregations in New York City and probably in all of America. His messages centered on God's power, love, and divine goodwill for all, not in some distant future, but just as Jesus taught when, right now, right here, right now. Fox said, "There's no need to be unhappy or discouraged." This is from one of his lessons. "There's no need to be disappointed or oppressed or aggrieved. There is no necessity for anything but success, good health, prosperity, and abounding interest and joy in life. As long as you accept a negative condition at its own valuation, you remain in bondage to it. But you have only to assert your birthright as a free man or a free woman, and you will be free." Emmett Fox was the author of over 30 books, most still widely used today, including His famous Sermon on the Mount, The Key to Success in Life, which is used by ministers all over the world. One of the writers said they're closet New Thought ministers. They use the work, but they don't identify it as that. I don't think Emmett Fox would really care. But also, this is one of the books that's used in the Alcoholics Anonymous group, as some of his other books and pamphlets are. And among his most popular and profound teachings is that life is consciousness. Fox wrote that we are what we think, and in order to change our lives, we must change our thinking. If we want to make any change in our outer world, we must develop conscious awareness of our daily thought processes and connectivity to God. And actually, that concept was already also taught by Rumi, Jesus Christ, the Buddha, Gandhi, and mystics from all across wisdom traditions. And another teaching that I know many of you know is from a pamphlet that is top sales of all New Thought materials. Anybody want to guess what it is? Yeah, the Golden Key. You got it. The Golden Key. The concept here is, if you're not familiar with it, the concept here is when you are having any difficulty in your life, stop thinking about the problem, whatever it is, and think about God instead. Fox writes, if you are thinking about your difficulty, then you are not thinking about God. Wherever you are, wherever you might be, the golden key to harmony is in your hand right now. And I put a few pamphlets of the golden key out on the table. Sarah ordered more, so more will be in for next week. But you absolutely can Google this, and it's available free online. So if you want to read more about the golden key, that's the crux of it. So Emmett Fox is truly an international New Thought father. He was born in Ireland, as we said, raised in England. He ministered in America and made his transition in France in 1951. His 20-year ministry is a global legacy. As the authors of his life and story write, life has been made richer for millions of Americans, are millions of people in the world, because of Emmett Fox. He built his church on consciousness, knowing that God is constantly available and everywhere present, that the way to freedom is the understanding that God is the only power and only presence in our lives. So quite a legacy from Emmett Fox, even if he wasn't in the Unity Church, right? We can appreciate all New Thought and lots of truths from many faiths. And so our final New Thought freedom writer is someone who is very much alive. I thought that might be nice to talk about somebody who's still living, right? So, and it is Dr. Michael Beckwith. How many of you have heard of him? A lot of you, okay. Dr. Beckwith is a leading New Thought minister who was born in 1956, and he's married to Ricky Byers Beckwith, who's also a New Thought leader and musician. Beckwith is the founder of the Agape International Spiritual Center, and it's in Culver City, California, and he describes it, or they describe themselves, as a trans-denominational church. Founded in 1986, the Agape Center now has a congregation. Are you ready for this? Anybody want to guess how many? 10,000 people. 10,000 people in his congregation, as well as many local, they also do a lot of local and global outreach ministries. Agape's community programs feed the homeless, serve incarcerated individuals and their families, partner with community services to be active in schools and homes for youth and at risk. They support the arts and advocate the preservation of our planet's environmental resources. The global humanitarian programs provide food, retraining, schools, libraries, orphanages, hospitals, clinics, microloans, and financial support during natural disasters worldwide. Quite an organization. Beckwith himself serves on international panels with other peacemakers and spiritual leaders, including the Dalai Lama. And in 1996, he co-founded the Association for Global Thought, an umbrella organization for all New Thought denominations. And Unity Worldwide Ministries is a member of that organization. And Michael Beckwith is going to be speaking at the Village in October, and he's been there before also. Now, according to the website blackpast.org, Dr. Beckwith grew up a Methodist, but left his religion at the age of 16. In his early 20s, he attended Morehouse College, which he chose because Martin Luther King had gone there, but then he transferred to the University of Southern California. In California, Beckwith was arrested for possession and selling of drugs. While incarcerated and waiting for trial, he turned to spiritual and mystic teachings. He filled his cell up with all these spiritual books and just studied and prayed and read. And fortunately, he was released without being charged, and he vowed at the time that he would turn his life around and use any gifts he had in service to the divine. And Beckwith tells that story in one of my favorite of his books, Spiritual Liberation. Can't see that. That's Spiritual Liberation. And it's an amazing story. It really is. True to his word, he did turn his life around. He attended the Ernest Holmes College of Ministry and was ordained in religious science in 1985, even though his church he has is not part of the religious science movement. That's where his ordination came from. After graduating from ministerial school, he began teaching a few friends in his home, like Fillmore's did. Eventually, he applied to be a senior minister in some church in Orange County, and the interviewing panel did not feel at that time that the community would accept an African-American leader, so they turned him down. Undaunted, he turned right around and founded the Agape Center, which I've already shared with you how that went. I want to go back a slide here. I'm not sure that you can read this, but since we're going to be working on vision and mission statements soon, this is Agape's mission. Now, usually mission statements are one line, so we don't have to make ours this long, but I thought you might be interested in it. The Agape International Spiritual Center is a global community dedicated to recognizing, honoring, and nurturing the dignity and uniqueness of all people. Through devoted practice of universal spiritual principles embodied in the New Thought, Ancient Wisdom teachings, I like that, New Thought, Ancient Wisdoms, I like that, we are ancient agents of transformation. As a trans-denominational community, we serve within all levels of society to reveal the underlying perfection and harmony of the universe. We embrace the transformational and evolutionary impulse of the planet through our spiritual practice, sacred service, and unconditional love. And their purpose statement is a little bit like that. At the very bottom it says, very simply, we are here for God. So, in addition to being a powerful speaker and world leader, Beckwith has authored at least 8 books. He's produced 3 movies and co-authored 120 songs with his wife. Dr. Beckwith's fame catapulted after the release of the film The Secret. Did everybody remember that? In 2006, it was really a hot item at the time. Then he became a regular guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show and others, and he's been featured in Unity Magazine several times. Now, the Agape website outlines 5 spiritual principles. I want to quickly share them with you, not in their entirety. If you want to see them in their entirety, just look on their website. But see if these sound a little familiar also. Number 1, God is good, therefore life is good. Absolute goodness is the substance, the source, and the supply of all existence. Number 2, God is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, and omniactive, they add. All existence in the manifest form is activity of spirit. This presence is equally available in all space, time, places, and persons. And number 3, every person is an individualized expression of God. Every person is made in the image and likeness of the divine and is capable of awakening to this realization and giving expression to the qualities of unconditional love, compassion, wisdom, bliss, peace, and creativity. Doesn't that remind us of Charles Fillmore's line about you are here on this earth to be all you can imagine God to be? Number four, every person is responsible for his or her own evolution. Every individual has been given the power of free choice and is therefore self-responsible for their evolution, following a path suited to their own individual state of evolving consciousness. We're all on individual paths to the same end. And five, and last, the universe being infinite is in a constant state of evolutionary expansion. And that one reminds me of one of my favorite quotes of Beckwith that I've said before. And he says, there is a vibratory frequency with every turn of the earth. If you are at the same place as you were 360 days ago, you didn't stand still, you what? Went backward. Remember that one? You went backward. You are constantly unfolding so that you can reveal the majesty and power of God. And from one of my very favorite books, I'm going to end with this. I have used this book so much. I've dog-eared it and underlined it and everything else. This is a 40-day, it's called 40-Day Mind Fast Soul Feast, A Guide to Soul Awakening and Inner Fulfillment. So it's meant to be a 40-day practice. And I could not decide which day to do, so I decided just to do day one. And he always begins each day with a little quote from somebody. Sometimes it's Jesus, sometimes it's the Buddha, it's different leaders. Today it's Ernest Holmes. And so the quote is, "The divine plan is one of freedom. The inherent nature of man is ever seeking to express itself in terms of freedom, because freedom is the birthright of every soul." That's from Ernest Holmes. And here's the little meditation. The soul's organic freedom. There's a wise Zen saying that says, forgot that I did that, there we go. You cannot stop birds from flying around your head, but you can prevent them from making nests in your hair. As you begin to mature spiritually, you discover that although you cannot stop the world's chatter about lack and limitation from whirling all around you, you can prevent it from lodging in your consciousness. How? Through meditation and affirmative prayer, the compass of your awareness develops the habit of continually turning in the direction of spirit for intuitive guidance, wisdom, joy, love, and peace. Now, I'm not suggesting that you should deny the noisy birds of limitation, sometimes flying around in your experience, begging you to throw them some crumbs of your attention. What I am saying is that by staying your attention on the changeless reality of your authentic self, you will experience an inner freedom from things that distract you from your awakened nature. By reversing the searchlight of your senses and focusing your attention on that which is real, you will undergo a permanent shift in consciousness which will requalify your entire experience. That's that pivotal soul. This day, set your intention to silently converse with the spirit in the language of your own heart. If it is peace that you seek, look first to the source residing on the altar within. If it is joy that you long, commune with its source in meditation. If it is a sense of safety and inner security you want, practice affirmative prayer about your true nature of immortality and wholeness. You will be free from the intrusive clamor of mediocrity going on around you, and at last taste the freedom for which you yearn. And the little affirmation is an affirmation every day is, I renounce any sense of being bound by habit, personal history, experience of circumstance. I am free as spirit is free. So, Michael Beckwith. Well, Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And so I think this new thought movement in America, of which we are a part, of which Unity is a part, has helped millions of people worldwide escape the bondage of fear, worry, and guilt, to realize the true freedom that comes from knowing we are spiritual beings, having a human experience. We are on this earth to imagine, to be all that we can imagine God to be. Let's make that freedom part of our 4th of July celebration this year. And let's just, as we prepare for our time for prayer and meditation, let's affirm our great truth about God, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.